Welcome to the Adult Autism, A Spectrum of Uniqueness podcast, a podcast series for adults on the autism spectrum or those who think they might be autistic. Here's your host, Chris Quarto. Hello once again, Autism Nation. Welcome back to the Adult Autism, A Spectrum of Uniqueness podcast. I was going to say forecast. We have an eclipse that's happening today. I'm recording this on April 8th. In 2024. So I think my mind is kind of wrapped around that. Anyway, so we are joined today by Wendy Boring Bray, who is a licensed professional counselor in a couple of states. Wendy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. And it's a great day for the eclipse. Lots of change.
I don't know if you're going to be able to have any kind of eclipse. I know here I'm by Nashville and we're going to have like 92% sort of whatever you call it, blockage of the sun or whatever. So we're going to see, we're going to have a pretty good eclipse over here. I'm not sure what it's going to be like where you are.
So I'm in California and I think we're supposed to have a partial eclipse. Not sure what that's going to look like, but hopefully it'll be some change that, you know, the excitement is there.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in the counseling field.
Sure. I have been a mental health counselor for, I don't know, about 13 years, 14 years. Time flies by very quickly. And I decided that I wanted to go into counseling because it's funny now in retrospect when I look back, I wanted to understand why people do the things that they do. I couldn't understand. Now it makes a lot more sense. But during that time, I was like, I don't really understand how people react or the way that people do things, because it's very different than the way I see the world.
Okay.
So I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn more. And I decided to go into counseling for that reason. Then I also went forward with my doctorate in behavioral health. So I have a doctorate in behavioral health to learn more.
Awesome.
So, and if I'm being completely honest, I don't think the learning ever stops.
Well, I can totally agree with that because I love learning and lifelong learner. It's something that's very gratifying, you know, especially when you're doing this kind of work, it really is.
No. Absolutely. And it's wonderful to learn how modalities, how they come into practice, and then we see them come through for a spell and then they move on and then there's something new. So there's always things to learn.
Yeah.
Always. And going back to my original question of why did I get into this, you know, to learn how other people think and why they do what they do, I still don't really have an answer. I have a much greater foundation to answer some of that. But everybody's different.
Well, and one of the things that I heard you say is that you've kind of looked at the world differently than other people have. That was kind of one of your reasons that you kind of got into this and you kind of wanted to learn about, you know, how people view things and how they see things. And you shared with me that you're an autistic person and gave me permission to share that on the podcast. And I wonder, as an autistic person, what are some challenges you face in your work with clients? And but how might that work as a superpower in your role as a counselor? I'm kind of interested in that too.
That's a great question because I tend not to be like typical counselors from my personal experience, but also from hearing what the people I work with say. From what I understand and what I've seen in my own personal journey is many counselors, therapists, they tend to be more reactive in just listening. And there's a lot of yes, okay, well, you know, how does that make you feel? For me, it's different. And when we talk about superpower is I tend to be more of a detective. Mm. So I tend to look for reasoning and I tend to look for correlations between thoughts and behaviors. It's not just a matter of, hey, I'm having a rough day. When a client comes in, they're having a rough day or something's going on with their life. For me, this is a challenge to really dig deeper and discover, okay, well, what's causing this rough day? Is it just that you woke up on the wrong side of the bed, or is there more to it? And I start to look for, I guess, clues on what could be causing this. And I have found that to be really successful in getting to the heart of issues. How is this difficult? It's difficult in the way that sometimes you don't empathize with your clients, I guess, on the level that they would maybe like somebody to empathize with. I don't always understand, well, why are you upset? I have a very proactive approach, like, okay, look, it was a bad day. That's okay. We all have bad days. What are we going to do now? It's very much a get up, dust yourself off, and let's move forward. That does not work for everyone. It doesn't. I've found that sometimes people just want to come in and just talk about how they felt. And maybe it's just more of a listening ear rather than, well, let's be proactive and move forward with this.
But you like being the investigator, and that seems to be something that would work really well in this role, because certainly there are things that you have to uncover about clients to that they might not even be aware of, right? To help them learn about themselves. We were talking about being the lifelong learners. And of course, I think in the role of a client, a lot of that has to do with just kind of learning about yourself, becoming self-aware. And it sounds like that's something that could really help them, develop that level of awareness. And it's like, oh, I never thought about that before. So I think I can definitely see how that would come off helpful. I think, you were talking about sometimes you might not be empathic, or that might not be your natural part of you. And I think that all therapists have something about them that they look at and say, this is something that I don't do as much as this other therapist does. So I think all of us who are in this field kind of look at what our strengths are, and what areas that we would like to kind of shore up if we could. I think that's characteristic of all of us in this field. So, but
It's
another thing I
fun.
wanted
It's
to,
fun. It's different.
I wanted to shift a little bit, because I know one of your interests is parenting as an autistic person. And I think a lot of our listeners are parents, and so they might be interested in hearing what you have to say about this. But you're a mom of, I think, three kids. And I'm guessing that autism could pose challenges in that kind of role. I mean, we were just kind of talking about it in the therapist role, but let's shift now to the parenting role. And perhaps there are some things that you have to contend with that neurotypical parents don't have to contend with as much. Can you talk about these things?
Absolutely, absolutely. It is something that I have found a passion in, because there's not a lot of discussion around it. I think we really focus on children that are autistic. My son is autistic, and so that growing up with him has been a whole whirlwind. Being a parent, though, is it has challenges. And now looking back again, it makes sense to me on why these challenges were so great. I didn't understand. I thought there's something wrong with me. So I am late diagnosed, but I thought something was wrong. And Pinterest, not my friend, not my friend. These Pinterest moms, more power to you. You guys are amazing. Not my friend, because I could not live up to that. If we talk about, I mean, starting from pregnancy, I think that that is a time when most pregnant people, they, whatever gender, they tend to really connect with their child at that point. That was difficult for me because there was this, what I would call alien, quote unquote, alien taking over my body, and I had no more control of what was going on. And it was a very odd feeling, and it wasn't comfortable for me. So just that experience in and of itself was difficult. And then, of course, when you have the child, it's learning a totally new routine. And for me, that's something that's it is completely difficult. I need to have my routines. So you have this new baby. Guess who gets to run the house and change your routine, right? It's that new little tiny person. So that was hard, and that not having sleep was difficult. And I know that's difficult for most parents. But when you're autistic and you have no sleep and your routine is disrupted and there's just everything happening, it turns you into a person that's very frustrated. And society looks at you like, well, what's wrong with you? You know, where's this natural inclination to bond with this child? And, you know, this child should be your everything and you should be so excited. And with my first child, it was depressing. And I was diagnosed with postpartum depression, and she wouldn't stop crying. And for me, noise is very difficult. It was tough. It was tough. It was very hard for me to cope with the crying, the noise, the noise. And then if we want to step into other sensory issues, like you're always wet. Your hands are wet from washing your hands all the time, or trying to give the child a bath, or you're changing diapers, or it was very uncomfortable for me. I had a really hard time with that, and smells. So a lot of sensory issues that we don't discuss, but society tells us you need to accept that. That's great. Oh, look at this perfect person that you have, and all I could think about was, this is great, but she won't quit crying and she's making a mess everywhere. And I'm having a difficult time. So that was hard, not having any peace and quiet to myself. That was
Well,
a struggle.
not being able to get away from it, not
Yeah.
having the control. And it's like, I'm kind of stuck. I mean, what am I gonna do?
Exactly.
I'm here, I'm having these issues, but what can I do? How did you deal with all of that?
If I'm 1,000,000% honest and transparent, luckily, you know, their father, my husband at the time, really, he stepped in and he was able to give me the space that I had to have. And I'm really fortunate that he was so nurturing and caring. So it was a great combination between him and I. And I don't know how I could have done this on my own. It was
So he
very
really stepped
hard.
up and helped you out.
Very much so. I could not imagine doing it as a single parent. So single parents out there, oh, you wear the crown. It was hard, you know. And then they turn into toddlers, and then they're into everything, and anything that you have that is sacred, you have to hide. And so that was really hard for me because, for example, if this is my pen, do not touch this is my pen. Right? This is my pen, and I don't want anybody to touch my pen. They were into everything. So that was another step. And then as they turn into teenagers, that was probably one of the most difficult times for me, different than them growing up. I mean, you know, as little people. That's where other parents really judge you as a parent. That was hard for me because I couldn't do things that other parents could do. I tried really hard, and I think that's where masking plays a big role in a lot of parenting, I guess for me. I did not like going to school functions. I hated it. And you have to go to these school functions and you have to cheer your child on. And it's not that I didn't love my child and that I didn't want to be there for them. I didn't want to be in a crowd. I didn't want to be around the noise. I did not want to have to talk to other parents. I didn't care really what other parents had to say and how wonderful their child was. I was there to get from point A to point B. That was it. Yeah, that was
Well,
it.
it's interesting how you kind of talk about how at different age levels, it sounds like there were different challenges for you. And at this point in time, when they get to be teenage years, there's a lot more of the social interaction that you're kind of being pulled into. Your natural inclination sounds like is just to kind of avoid that and not want to be part of that. But yet, you have all these things that kind of are part of being a parent as well, as like, yeah, I should be there, but but I'll feel so guilty if I'm not there. And it's all these feelings that you have inside, but yet, there are these competing forces. It had to be so difficult for you.
It was, and I love that you say, I'll feel so guilty if I'm not there. Many times I didn't feel guilty, and other people told me I had to feel guilty. And I was like, well, why do I need to feel guilty? I don't want to be there. And they could not understand that I did not want to be there. So again, it was the societal pressure of being something I didn't want to be. On the flip side to all of this, as my children have gotten older, my oldest one is now 30, and we can have these conversations. But it was hard for her because she was the one with the mom that really didn't want to go to her tennis games or her cheerleading events because I didn't want to be in the crowd and I didn't want to be with the people. So she was the one with the mom that generally wasn't there. So that was really difficult for her as well. And I think to this day, she has maybe a little resentment towards that. And I've tried to explain to her, I couldn't do it. It's not that I didn't love you and didn't want to be there. It was just really hard for me to do.
Think as a father of an autistic son who was late diagnosed, he is now 35. It has been a lot different just finding out about this and kind of looking back at myself and my parenting, and it's like, if only I would have known, because I probably would have done things so much differently than I did. And my wife feels the same way. But it's so different having an adult son or an adult child, trying to help him navigate through his kind of learning about himself all over again, and kind of developing his identity. Now he's looking through the world through autistic lens, where it hadn't been that way before, to try to understand himself and who he is. And for us to learn how to interact with him in a way that is validating to him, and is accepting of him, now that he has this new identity. And so it's been challenging, but it's been actually kind of cool as well, learning about him and this new person. And it's almost like in a sense he's being reborn, just kind of going through this process. And it's for me, it's almost an honor to go through this process with him as he's learning all this stuff.
That's exciting. It's super exciting. I know my youngest son, I have two daughters and then my son, and he will be 16 this year. He was diagnosed at, I think he was 18 months. No, he was 2.5. He was 2.5. And as so this is kind of interesting because, and it goes along with what you're saying. My son, he was just very different, very, very different than my girls. And I thought, well, it's probably because he's a boy. I don't know. Well, if the girls were work, the boy was a lot more work because he's jumping all over things. And I'm like, what are you doing? Oh my gosh. He just, no fear. No fear. Jumping off the couch, like no fear, right? No fear at all. But he was different. And I couldn't quite pinpoint what was going on with him. He never slept ever, even when he was brought home from the hospital, never slept. And I'm like, well, okay, you're very different than the girls. He didn't really talk. He used to hide in the cabinets. And I thought, okay, I'm not sure what's going on. So finally, there was a program where we lived where they would do early intervention. They said, oh, I think, he might be autistic. And this, goes with the parenting as well. I'm like, oh, okay. Just kind of casual, like, okay. So let's have him tested. So we did, and it was a full day of testing. And then they came back and said, okay, your son's autistic. And I was like, oh, okay. And the girl that had set this up for me, the lady, she told me it's okay to grieve. You can grieve. I know all your dreams of what your son was going to do have now changed. And I thought, okay, I don't, there just wasn't that feeling of I should grieve. What should I grieve for? That's okay. Now I just need to learn. And
Yeah.
that's all I needed to, is I just needed to learn. What does he need? I'm
Right.
not grieving anything. So I don't know if that's me being autistic or just something I was told I had to do. I don't know. But
Yeah.
I learned with him about being free and not having to mask and being able for to teach him, accept who you are. It's okay.
Wow.
It's okay. The world is going to tell you a lot of things. And I was really excited in the sense that for me growing up, I had to be placed in a mold, right? And just like being a parent, you have to be put in this mold and you have to be a certain way. I was very fortunate to have that experience, even though it wasn't always the greatest, to be able to help my son not to have that experience.
Sure.
So he gets to
Well,
be who he wants to be now.
what a thing for that person to have told you that it's okay to grieve. It's a horrible thing to be told. And I'm so glad that as a society we're kind of moving away from that kind of mindset, looking at autism as something that's wrong with a person, as opposed to just it's a difference, it's a diversity type of thing. And I think we still have a lot of work to do, but I'm glad we're sort of trending in that direction now. Well, what are some ways that children of autistic parents may be impacted, maybe even what are some positives that come out of having a parent who is autistic? How do kids benefit from having an autistic parent?
I think that for me, probably the greatest benefit would be that your parent, while they may not always give you the beautiful, fluffy words, they will be honest with you. And sometimes honesty doesn't sound wonderful, but they are doing this because they love you, they care for you. They want the best for you. So I think it's hard for a child when they see other parents saying honest words in a big fluffy way. It's really sugar-coated. Where autistic parents tend to be a little more forward. Oh, I really don't like your hair green. Or, a neurotypical parent may say, oh, I like that. I like that. I think I liked the blue better. Where an autistic parent may say, oh, that's hideous. That green is not your color. You need to change that. So it's not that they're trying to be mean. It's not that they're trying to be mean. It's just that this is how they see the world. And accepting them for that is huge. I think also that autistic parents don't get caught up in a lot of the dramas that other parents may. So having an autistic parent, in a way, you're lucky that you're sheltered from that drama, and you're taught that doesn't have to be a part of your life. You don't have to choose that. I think that's really, especially girls. Girls are brought up in so much drama, and they have to, conform to society's norms, where an autistic parent may not believe in that. That's outside of what they care about. So I
It's
think
so,
that's important.
yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say it's so
No.
refreshing to hear this, because people, it sort of goes back to it's okay to grieve. So many people don't consider the positives about how kids, if you ask how are they impacted by you as a parent, they don't consider, well, they could be impacted in really positive ways. And one of the first things I heard you say is you really seem to place a value on honesty. And I found the same thing in my evaluations of, I'm a psychologist, so I evaluate adults all the time for autism, that comes through almost every time, the value that they place on honesty. And so your children learn that from a young age, that it's important to be open and honest with people. And isn't that what we hope that happens in our relationships anyway, is to be open and honest with people. So I can really see the value of that coming through as well. Anything else that you want to share around that?
I think most importantly, as an autistic parent, I think it's important to remember not to get caught up in trying to be something that you're not. It's a trap. And I think that anytime we walk out our front door, we have to be prepared to fall into that trap. And it can be challenging as an autistic parent from all stages, from pregnancy, up until, my daughter, that I said, my oldest is 30 now, and I have new challenges, such as when she got married and trying not to, I guess, stand out or do the wrong thing, quote unquote, that other people won't understand. It's a challenge. Like, going through this process is a challenge. And I think it's important for autistic parents to know that it's okay. You are not going to be that Pinterest parent. And that's okay, because just like we're talking, there are wonderful, wonderful qualities and traits that you are going to give your child. And I think the biggest thing that you are going to teach them is that it's okay to be yourself. You don't have to be somebody else for society's sake. Be you. And I think that's the greatest gift that you can give them. I think in today's society, so many people are something that they're not, and they have to continue being that. You get to give your child the opportunity to be free. That's huge.
It's similar to the whole masking thing, where you're basically telling your child you don't need to put on a mask. You're
No.
beautiful. You're beautiful the way you are. So
You
that's
are.
great advice. Well, that kind of is a good segue into the next question I had for you, because I know that you're writing a children's book. So tell us what that's all about.
Absolutely. Mad props to the people that write children's books. You make it look incredibly easy. It is not. So I am writing a children's book. And we are in our second draft now of doing that. And it's for children that have an autistic parent. I think
Ooh.
we're so focused, right, on children that are autistic and neurotypical parents that are raising an autistic child, that we need to back up and look a minute for children that are being raised by an autistic parent.
Yeah.
Their life may look a little bit different. Mom Mom may wear her headphones at the mall. And that's okay. That's okay that mom does that. Mom may not look directly at you when she's talking. And that's okay. Mom may go on some wild tangents about, I don't know, the philosophy in 300 BC. And that's okay. It's learning that, parents, caregivers come in all different packages. And that's okay. That's what makes that child uniquely them, is by accepting, hey, my parent is uniquely him, her. It's okay. Okay, so that is what this book is about. It's about looking at it through a child's lens of living with an autistic parent.
Wow, I have never heard of a book like that before. That sounds like an awesome book.
I think that we need it. I think that kids, especially there are many people that are being diagnosed later in life, and that's, because during our time growing up, it wasn't on the table. It wasn't on the table. And now that we're seeing that, what a great way to share with these kids that, there are differences, and that difference may be in your house, and that's all right. How can you guys work together?
That's awesome. So what age levels is the book designed for, being written for?
Probably four through eight, right in there. But honestly, going through the back door, I'm hoping that parents will read it as well, and that they will gain an acceptance themselves from doing some of these things. Like, it's okay to be that parent. It's okay to be that caregiver. It's okay. Your kids are going to understand. So as they're sitting there reading that with their child, I'm really hoping that they gain that acceptance of themselves as well.
That's great. It's sort of like when my kids were younger, we used to take them to movies, and of course, some of the movies, you know that the writers are writing some of the lines for the parents, for the adults. It's sort of like this with you. You're kind of communicating to the parent that they're okay, that this is okay, the way they are,
Exactly.
and their kids are going to be okay as well. So,
They will. Their kids are going to be amazing. Their kids are going to be like top notch, and that's what I love about this. They will. They'll be very secure, wonderful, amazing individuals.
that's great. Well, what are a couple of key points that you might recommend for autistic folks that are listening to this podcast? Maybe autistic parents or just autistic folks in general?
I think first and foremost, autism is not something that needs to be done away with. Autism is, it's almost a gift. I know some people won't see it that way, and that's okay, and I can understand why, and I know that there's different levels. But if I've learned anything from watching my son grow, is that what a beautiful way to see the world. There are other ways to see the world compared to how neurotypical see it. I know that the world is designed for neurotypical people, and I understand that. But what a gift to be able to see things differently, to admire things that are overlooked, to be able to create worlds that are so intense that a neurotypical person may not be able to create or to see. I think that there's beauty in it if you look for it. I know that there's challenges. I understand that 1,000,001%, but there's also beauty. And if you can find the beauty, sometimes that dulls the challenge. For autistic parents, be you. Be you. There's no reason to be anything but yourself. Your children are going to love and appreciate you for you being you. Kids are smart. They know when you're trying to be something you're not. So be you. And for kids out there, stay strong. It is a hard world sometimes, but stay strong. Lean into the people that you know and trust. I think that's so important. There's a community out there. You just got to find your people.
That was something my son's therapist had told him, that you need to find your tribe. You need to find the people who you connect with. And yeah, there's a lot of truth, but great words of wisdom there, that you just shared with us. There might be some listeners who might want to reach out to you, ask you some questions. How can they connect with you if they do have questions?
Sure, you can always go to my website, which is Wendy Boring Bray, and that's BoringBray.com. You can find me there. I'm on Instagram. It's DR period boring, BoringBray. You can find me in those two places.
That's great. Well, Wendy, thanks so much for spending time with us today and sharing your insights and your knowledge about this area. And by the way, I forgot to ask you, when do you think that that book might be coming out?
I am hoping midsummer. Hoping for midsummer. Yes. I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, we're on the second draft. We've gone from people to now we're having a dog instead of the people. It's going to be a little Shiba Inu dog that's talking about their mom. And so
That's great.
it is more child friendly. It's super cute. It's based off of my little dog. She's a Shiba Inu. So I thought, oh, this would be cute. So we're going to do it that way.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for spending time, and I hope you have a great rest of the day. Of
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
course, thanks. We'll see you.